This evening on Ireland Life, a bit of a special as we look back at the life of a man who needs no introduction.
Hello, this is Terry Kringle.
And this is Howard Kane. Not quite two old farts yet, but it's a chance, I thought, to drop in on Terry. Now that, well, I don't know whether he's the History Man or the Kringle File, or you might know him from the papers, or freelance work at goodness knows what, has eventually hung up his notepad, as you might have seen in the papers of late. So I thought it was a chance to drop by, have a quick coffee, go and see him, how he's getting on, and hear a little bit about some of those early days, because, what, 70-odd years in journalism. How did it all start out? Because journalism wasn't in the family, was it?
It wasn't in the family, and it certainly wasn't. I didn't have it in my mind when I was still at Douglas High School up at St Ninian's, when I was still there and, you know, coming to the end, and just didn't have anything at all in mind. I was casting around, and I had to think of something.
Something to do.
Yeah, I knew I was being flung out into the big wide world, and I had to do something. And fortunately, I had a tip-off. I had one of my fellow people up here sort of said, "Well, look, you should think about getting, you know, try and get a job in the Examiner." I can tell you what, I know somebody, and I'm told that they're looking for somebody to take on and train as a cub reporter. So I said, "Oh well, I'll try that." So what'll I do? Just call down at the Examiner office in Hill Street, and I'll do that. Well, the only way I could go there was on foot. No, I went from school, from the high school, and it was, you know, it's a good long walk from there down to Hill Street, and it was pouring with rain. And so when I got there, I was drenched from head to foot. However, I went in, they had the little Examiner shop part of the frontage, which people went in to put their adverts and, you know, pick up copies of the paper. And I said, "I've come to apply for the job as a radio reporter." And the girl behind the counter said, well, I didn't know that that was on. But anyway, come on in and come and see him. Come and see Mr. Stephen. I thought, right, OK. So I came in, and there he was sitting behind his desk. And I was there covering, you know, spitting water all over the place. And so he said, you want to take a job? You want to become a reporter? I said, yes, please, if you don't mind, if you'd like to take me on. Well, he said, fine. In fact, I'm not going to ask you any questions. The fact that you found we were looking for somebody is a good mark on your side. You were finding out something, and that's what we have to do. So you found out, you spent enough time in my office in front of my desk, shedding water all over the floor. So it's done. You're on. Just get out. Come back again, turn in for work on next Monday at 9 o'clock, and we'll have you on and take you around and show you how to do it all, if you need to be shown." I thought, well, I do. So, I turned up, and I was taken on, went on to the Examiner in Hill Street. And there they started to teach me by example, more or less. They just said, "Look, whatever any of the other reporters are doing, you go with them and see what they do and just use your head." In those days, there was no typewriters. Copy was written by hand.
Oh, gosh.
So that was it. We had little pads. And so we wrote whatever I was asked to do. But what the others did, they just wrote it, and it was handed down to the works, where they had this big Cossa press, which was a thunderous thing. Once they pressed the button on that to put the Examiner to press and get it out on the streets, there was a tremendous noise. And I loved it. Other people did. And of course, you know, the old copy went down to one of the boys who looked at it and pressed the button and put it up in lead. These were the days of hot lead.
Hot lead.
Nobody had invented what are those damn things that replaced typewriters?
Oh, word processors.
Word processors. Computers. Computers, yes, the dreaded computers, which I never liked. Still don't.
There's time yet.
Well, yeah. So that's how it went on. And I found I was okay. I mean, at school, I'd been good at English. Really very good, exceptionally good, actually. So I had no trouble as far as that was concerned. What I wrote made sense. And so that's how it went on and on and on.
And on.
And then, of course, National Service intervened. I was called up 1949 and shot off for what became 2 years National Service. It was meant to start off as 18 months. But while all this was happening, the Korean War started. So everybody who'd been called up got an extra 6 months.
After his much-loved National Service, Terry went on to work in the UK for several papers, made a big change in his life and started to become a legend in his own lunchtime.
While I'd been away, travelling around the country, I got married to a Yorkshire lady in Otley, name of Anne. We're now divorced. She divorced me for very good reason. I was a bad boy, and it was the greatest mistake I ever met. And by this time, I'd learned a bit about freelancing. And so what I did was I would send stuff to the... I mean, I was well known in Manchester, which was the last place I was working. And you know, when I went away, the boys said, look, come on, we don't get a very good news service from the fellas over there. You know the score. Do it. So every lunchtime, when... it was dinner time, of course. The other reporters would go off home for dinner. This is why I don't eat lunch anymore. I was able to nip out with that news of today, go round the corner to the phone box and send it to all the customers. And I made a lot of money. And, you know, and as far as I was concerned, that was good because I like money and I know how to spend it, believe me.
You're not alone there.
And then, of course, a rival to the news monopoly which the papers had always enjoyed on the island arrived in the shape of Manx Radio.
What the Examiner had done was they decided, if we're going to supply them with the news, it won't be on Manx Radio. We'll have it in the Examiner long before it gets to Manx Radio. And, of course, they forgot that these were two different aspects of the media. The people would be happy to listen to it on Manx Radio a little bit, get the full story from the Examiner. Anyway, the Examiner made a mess of that. And so Manx Radio came along and said, right, will you do a new service for us? So I did it. I set up the Manx Radio's first new service. Yes. And so the directors of Manx Radio took me on. And, of course, eventually the government took over and they took over me as well. And that was it. I stuck with Manx Radio.
So how did it work in the early days? Was it just you or with anyone else, any other reporters?
Eventually, a friend of mine, good friend of mine, called Alan Bell, A.K. Bell, now in retirement. He used to supply me with news because he was still working. I think he's working at the Times, I think. So he was sending me stuff which to be paid for. Anyway, now I was full-time freelance. Mm-hmm. And
working, doing the news service for Manx Radio then, of course.
The condition was that I gave Manx Radio, they didn't get a big run, an extra. It had to be even Steven for the people I send it to, the people I gave to Manx Radio, which worked fair enough. And because I'd got experience of when I was in Manchester, I got some experience there working with the BBC. And actually, the BBC had an unmanned studio in Douglas. It was in the is upstairs over the billiard saloon on the promenade. So I knew how to do broadcasting. Colin Brown, mm-hmm. Colin Brown, as we all know, he was the third who came to the trio. Anyway, this went on quite nicely. And then all of a sudden, the government said Manx Radio was spending too much money. There must be so many redundancies. So I was made redundant. So I went to see the managing director. I said, "You're making me redundant. The other players are good. I'm better than they are." He said, "Well, you are better than they are, but you're getting more money than they are, so that's what we've got to save." And I said, "Oh, all right." He was a great bloke, that managing director.
But you can't keep a good man down. Terry became well known on the morning news shift, but what about the famous, nay, infamous, Kringle File?
I was up early. I had to be up at 5. And I think the early news may have been around about 7 o'clock. And this was where the man who was running things up there, as far as the program was going, was good old George
Ferguson.
Mm. And George said, "Look, Terry, you know, I like the thing you do. Why don't you, when you're doing the news, also slip in a program called The Kringle File? And that's a good idea." I said, "That's a fine idea." I said, "Yeah, but what'll I put in it?" He says, "Look, I decide you're going to do it. You decide what you're going to put in it." So the humour is my great failure, my great weakness, or my great charm, whatever it is, I don't know. And I found that there wasn't much I could do. So I began picking up on jokes and mistakes that were being made anywhere at all. And so quickly the public caught on. So all sorts of stuff was coming my way. So the Kringle File was a huge success, and it caught the early morning traffic, you know.
So was that how your sort of link with humour started, really, doing the Kringle File, you think?
And that convinced me that the way I want to work was to use as much humour as possible. Now, roundabout, it so happened that the Isle of Man had its first drugs bust. And it was a fellow, a local lad from university who was home for the break. Mm-hmm. And he smoked cannabis. And he was up on Douglas Head smoking cannabis. And he was found out, and he was arrested and taken to court. What eventually happened to him, I don't know. The story was obviously on the Manx Radio News. That was the moaning, and then the moaning, the man in line was on.
Oh, yes, the old moaning.
Yeah, and on to the man in line after this drugs case came on. And a good Manx lady, and she said, "What's all this about you and this fella up on Douglas Head with a can of piss?" But from then on, as far as I was concerned, if I could make it funny or something funny was going on, for me, it was a deal, and that's what I wanted, and that's what I was happy doing forever after.
Forever. And what about meeting? Because obviously, being a journalist and being well known in your time, and I would say easily the best known journalist on the Isle of Man for years and years and years.
A media celebrity.
A media celebrity?
Yes. Which really pissed people off.
But you did meet, for example, someone like Sean Connery.
I did, yeah. That was when the casino was mooted, which was a brilliant idea, I thought. Because they didn't have casinos, except private ones, across the water. And so the casino was opened, and it was a mayor of Douglas who, I've forgotten his name, it was his bright idea. Anyway, so Sean Connery came over, and he did the opening thing, and his clever trick was to, the ceremony part, was him throwing the ball into the roulette wheel. So he threw it in, and it bounced back out again. And I thought, well, he's not much good at this, is he? I hope he's good at being a 007 if he can't do a roulette wheel. And, he laughed as well. He's the same age as me, Sean Connery, and nearly as good looking.
Sylvia Crystal, that's someone else you met?
Well, yes. And she came over. She was making a film. But it was a strange film. And she was staying at the Palace Hotel. And I was sent up, you know, to go interview her. So I went up, knocked on the door, came in. And she said, oh, yes, I don't mind at all. And the producer was there, the film, and he said, no, that's all right. I'll stay by, though, just to keep things clean. Or, you know, I don't know what he meant, but he... she was in bed, and I knew she had no clothes on. So I sat on the bed next
like
to her.
John and Yoko.
I sat on the bed next to her. I knew she had no clothes on. But I got through, and she got the interview, and she was really, really good fun. I never looked back on
marvellous. Made a clean breast of it. Well done. Yeah. We were mentioning the Manx Radio and the Kringle File, the yeah. papers, of course. Border Television, you used to supply for Border Television.
Well, yes, they were at that time. First of all, it was Granada who had that they dealt with. They included the Isle of Man in their broadcast area. So I was the regular coverer of the Isle of Man for Carlisle. And there was a freelance photographer working there, Steve. And he went off ages ago to Canada. And so I did a lot. I was on air almost every day with, you know, did lots and lots of stories. And I learned how to do it, how to talk to the camera. And I got to like it. Oh, I loved it every time. And well, that was it. And so that made me... You know,
even more famous.
Even, yeah,
so. But of course, in those days, the film would have to be flown across
it
over.
Had to be flown
Carlisle.
Over. So that's why, as the cameraman, as I say, he happened to be a pilot, private pilot's license, so he could shoot off straight away with it, and they'd have it on air that night. So that that made me very, very famous.
Indeed.
Even in Carlisle.
And what about, sort of, do you remember or any of the big stories over the years stick in your mind? I suppose the most famous by far for people who've lived on the Isle of Man for a length of time would be the Summerland tragedy. Would that still stick in your mind as the biggest story? Or
I'll never forget that night, particularly. I was working hard trying to cover it, and the time went on. The bodies started coming out, and it was getting, you know, the ambulances were coming to take the bodies off to a morgue, and I just saw them, all those bodies, lined up regimentally in you know, covered up in ranks. That was the vision of that has never ever left me. And I never will forget that. That was my worst experience. And yet there was a strange side to it. The nearby pub, there were a whole lot of old age pensioners in there singing their heads off, not realising that right next door. It wasn't their fault. Yeah. They, you know, they'd have been shocked if they knew that. And they were singing away and having a good time.
And of course you just... You had to carry on. You had to cover the story.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. So, no. Summerland lasted with me a long, long time. I still will.
A first-class serious journalist, a humorist, a self-proclaimed media celebrity, a playboy, in some eyes, and, of course, lifelong sporter of a swarthy tan and not from a bottle.
You have a reputation always of being a sun lover, and that I can always remember, even when I started out at Manx Radio, still then, if it was a lovely hot day, in between bits of copy, there you'd be outside, stripped to the waist.
That's right, yeah. Down on the lower level, where the commercial department was. Nice sheltered place, and I could sit out. And I always had a good tan.
And still do.
Well, yeah, I get... plenty of chance here to sit out, and it'll be there today as well.
It will, we're heading that way.
Yeah.
Because I always remember, I don't know whether you remember this, but I think it was Susie Richardson when she was at Manx Radio for many years, and Susie tells a story of when she first started at Manx Radio, and she was a bit nervous her first day, and she came in And she says the very first person I met was just after a news bulletin, and then the studio door opened and Terry Kringle came out just wearing a pair of red underpants, she said.
That's right.
You've been sunbathing, gone in, done the news and gone back out to get a bit more raised. What do you think then over the years, is there anything you were particularly or anything you enjoyed most? So there was the papers, starting off in the Isle of Man, there was working at the papers in the UK, there was obviously Mike's Radio, there was Border, and then of course latterly, up until only a few months ago, people remember of course the History Man as well.
Now the History Man, that for me, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. History has always been a great interest of mine. That was something I was very good at school, one of my best subjects. And as a matter of print, you know, and doing other things, I would go to the Manx Museum. I used to go in there to get information on other things. And it occurred to me, and, you know, there's something more to be done with this. And I like research, so I researched more, and I finally produced it and thought, tried it out, and it worked. And I loved doing it. And I'm sorry it's not... Well, it does... On Sundays, it still comes out.
Yes.
It gets an airing now and again. It gets an airing. But don't get paid. Don't get paid for this. No.
You're right there.
So I'm very proud of the History Man, and it's been a long running program. I think I started it around about 2002. That's when the scripts I kept go back to, and that was every week. There must be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them.
So after this long and packed life, is there something of which Terry's most proud? Yes, there is. And not perhaps what you may think.
Yes. I've got a family.
Yeah.
I am a family man. That is the best coordination, human coordination, of people getting together is as a family. And I still have a family. My former wife, Anne, and I, we are still in close contact because we have this combined interest in the family itself. We have a son and a daughter and three grandchildren. And as far as we're concerned, that's the family.
Yeah.
And it's a happy family. The divorce didn't break them up. And family life is the best life. And I have family life here. The trouble is, a lot of my family, nearly all of my family, live off the island. They can't get here. So I'm just waiting for the borders to be lifted and then they can come over. And then they will come.
Yeah.
They like coming to see Grandad, getting him into the car, taking him for a run around the Isle of Man, which I never get to see. And it's amazing. I go out, Anne takes me out on runs all over, you know, now and again. And I've forgotten what the Isle of Man looks like. It's a beautiful place to live. It must be the most beautiful. It's the most beautiful place in the world for me. I'd sing you that song that the Bee Gees fella sang, you know. In the summer day is over.
Oh, the old Alan Bannon.
He was a little bit better than me.
And still enjoy the humour.
Oh, yeah. That's humour. Can't do without it. And fortunately, you're a funniosity yourself. You like humour.
I do my best.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, for me, I like listening to you.
Well, we've always loved listening to you, Terry. You've been an inspiration to so many people at Manx Radio and on the Isle of Man. A media star throughout, media star, playboy, journalist, goodness knows what, and still enjoying life. Thanks very much for taking some time to talk to us today.
It's been a pleasure. When, you know, you're coming to the end of your days and you want somewhere to go, try this place. Yeah, here in Cannell Court.
I'll move in with you.
Yeah, could be. Well...
I may join him yet. My thanks to Terry for giving up his valuable crossword time of a morning. Long may he continue. and my thanks to you for listening. Cheerio.